door, just so that, thank you. Okay, good evening, everyone. So, first of all, thank you for all of the Peterson Park and Lincoln Wood members who are here, constantly shifting, very amicable, going with the flow. But it's been a complicated last couple of days with everything going on in Israel, and so there have been a lot of emails back and forth until this evening was settled, so that's why we've been kind of in flux. So I apologize for all of the changes. I'm very much looking forward to Shabbos, so please God, that should be great. And thank you to Aliza and Craig for hosting vicariously.
I thought you were bringing snacks.
That's it. So, I think there are, also in case Jonah wants, we should just leave a couple in the back in case somebody comes. So, I think we face, that's good. So we face a complicated, kind of a complex situation tonight, I think. Because there are two ways, two perspectives, I think within all of us, and we're balancing these to different degrees, just by way of introduction. So some of us, and sometimes, we are affected by what's happening in Israel in a very immediate and intense way. And we're connected to it, whether it's because we have family members there, because we have a heightened sensitivity, because we are acutely conscious of what's happening. So we're very aware, we're involved in what's going on. So on that side, you know, some of the larger questions about, you know, how could this be happening? People who are very immersed in this, who know the people who we're talking about in the news, kind of like on a global level, you realize the types of tzaddikim and tzidkaniyos, the types of righteous individuals here. You're talking about, you know, wanton and indiscriminate violence, so it raises a lot of questions. So that's one set of questions. And then complementary with that is how to deal with that from, you know, someone would say, okay, so is there anything that you can say to comfort people? So tonight, we're not going to talk about dealing with the mega difficult question of the ages of Tzadik V'Ralo, but that is, for many of us, that is a front and center question that keeps coming up whenever we have these unfortunately terrible incidents. This is something that many of us think about and we struggle with. And this is something that the rabbis have a long tradition of dealing with this question in many different ways. So that's one issue that we need to deal with in some context. And then the question of, you know, are we going to provide some measure of comfort? No, it's impossible. It would be almost inappropriate and wrong to even imagine if we were going to provide some answer, some words of nechama. But on the other hand, I think there's a different challenge that some of us face, and we face at different times. And we have to ask ourselves the opposite question, which is, you know, do we care enough? Do we think about it enough? You know, maybe the barometer, one of the questions that was going back and forth among rabbinic emails over the last couple of days about tonight was, well, how might the Cubs game affect attendance at the Tehillim rally? So that question is a problematic question. It's a problematic question. You're talking about people who are living in Arzenu HaKadosha, Yerushalayim HaKadosha, and as far as Ranan or Chader, these people fearing for their lives, and we're worrying about, you know, people are going to be sitting home watching the Cubs game, so like, wait a second, Mehechetes, like, how does that question even get off the ground? And so let's assume that question never was asked and it's only theoretical and obviously it doesn't speak to any of us, but we should ask ourselves, you know, how much attention, how emotionally involved are we and should we be and can we be to be able to go on with our lives and at the same time really connect in a meaningful way? And I wonder if for some of us living 6,000 miles away, the second challenge is greater than the first. You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure there are people who are right here in our community who are having sleepless nights about the question, the theological conundrum of Tzadik V'Ralo. How could this happen to a couple, unbelievable young couple, credible, righteous, who now leave four orphans in the world? So that's one question. But on the other hand, is it just a news story that just passes And then we're on to the next thing, and it's a question of numbers, and are we really trying to get to know these people? So I think we need to balance those. And so what I'd like to focus on is kind of how we can think about some of this situation, kind of think about it for ourselves to help us come up with a plan for what is a meaningful, what is a potential meaningful avenue to approach this issue. So of course, the place to begin is the fact, the simple fact, and we need to remind ourselves, and what we're going to share tonight are things that are well-worn sources, but I think are worth reviewing, is the notion that we are connected and that it does matter to us. And we need to be machazik ourselves to remind ourselves that it does matter. It is us. And this breaks down in different ways in the basic fundamental principle we call arvus. So arvus can be translated as co-responsibility. And it manifests itself in different ways. So the first source, which is the Medrash Rabbah, the personification in arvus takes the place of an animal, actually. Chizkiah learned in Medrash Rabbah in Parsha Dalet Simin Vav, Se Pizura Yisrael. The Jewish people are like a sheep. Nimshulu Yisrael Se. Ma Se Hazel Loke Al Rosho O Be'echad. Turn the page, Me'evarav. Just like a sheep, a living organism, that if one limb hurts, V'chol Evarav Margishin, and all of its other limbs hurt, Kachen Yisrael. So to the Jewish people. And what's the context here? Echad mehem chote, one of them does something wrong, v'kulon margishin. We're all, literally, says the Medrash, in the same boat, third line down, Tanu Reb Shimon bar Yochai, mashal b'nei adam shayoshvim b'sfina. It's the analogy of the people who were in the boat. And what happens? Natal echad mehen makdeach, one of them took one of those screwdrivers, or... In the old days, I'm envisioning, and I can't tell myself, even though it's a serious topic, for some of us who are familiar with this episode of the Three Stooges, where Moe, Larry, and Curly are in the boat, and they have some water, so Curly is in the back with this screwdriver thing that he turns with his hand, so it's a water letter router, so he's opening the hole underneath his side in the boat, and then, of course, we all know what happens next. So says the Medrash, somebody else yells at him, Amru lo chaverav, ma tayoshivosa, what are you doing? You're drilling a hole in the back of the boat. So the guy says to him, Amru lo, no problem. Amru lo, ma echpas lachem, lo tachdiani kodeach, what do you care? I'm drilling under my seat. Right, you're on an airplane, and the person next to you says, I'm going to open the emergency exit, you're 25,000 feet up. You say, what are you doing? He says, no, it's next to my seat, it's my door. He says, no such thing. You're all in the same boat. So in this context, arvus means we're responsible for each other, not to sink the ship for everyone. That's one side. The exact opposite side, in an incredibly powerful way, is the Medrash Tanchuma that you see on the next page, on page 3. In the beginning of Parashas Nitzavim, the Torah tells us that we're all together, all of us, Rosheichem, Shifteichem, water carriers, leaders, everybody. And what is the context here? So the Gemara tells, the Medrash tells us, Medrash Tanchuma, Kulchem Arevim Zelazeh. We're all Arevim. We're all connected to each other. What does that mean? Afilu Tzadik Echad Beinechem. If there's one righteous person, Kulchem Omdim Bizchuso. We all stand in that person's merit. It's the power of the Koach HaTzibur. Maybe my davening, I come to davening, maybe it's a little bit shvach, but there's someone in that room, and hundreds of people, who is at such an exalted level, so all of our davening is going to be uplifted. You take one tzaddik, one righteous person, sometimes you can even feel that, your davening is a little bit shvach, but you know that there's someone row behind you, or the row next to you, or even in a different shul, that they're mamish, they're really davening. So that raises everyone. Everyone is uplifted by the presence of one tzaddik. That's because if you were on an island by yourself, what somebody else did wouldn't affect you. But it's not true. We're all in the same boat. So we're all in the same boat in the sense that if one person raises us up, then we're all affected by that. Now how does this happen? There is a teaching from the Holy Al-Sheikh HaKadosh. The Al-Sheikh lived in Sfat, the time of the great Mekubalim. So this is the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh. He has a commentary on the Chumash in Parashat Nitzavim. On that context, he describes, where I put the little arrow,
that Kol Ish Yisrael is what? Kulam tzaddikim v'kol Yisrael nikra goy echad v'nefesh achad. Echad. Kamodat Omar shivim nefesh ulios mishorish hakadusha shi achta shlema. V'al kein Kol Yisrael arevim zelazeh. We're all responsible for each other because we all come from the same source. All of our neshamas come from one place, from the makam of Achdus, from the Rabbona Shel Olam, and therefore we're all part of one entity. The Baal HaTanya, the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe in the Sefer HaTanya, he says it like this. He says, we're neshama achas, one soul, we have one giant soul, begufim mechulakim, in different, parsed out into different people, but really, at our source, deep down, we're all one neshama. And that's how we can affect each other. That's how we're all in the same boat. And for that reason, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who's known for various different things, one of the great Hasidei Ashkenaz, on page 5, he writes in the Sefer Hasidim, what do we need to do? Mipnei she Yisrael arevim zelazeh, since we're all connected with each other, lekach, therefore, kishetzar bo al echad, when one person is suffering, when one person is in trouble, Chayavim kulam lehitzar ulehispalo. All of us are called upon to daven, because it's all of us. So the first thing is to remind ourselves that it's not somebody else, it's not somewhere else, it's us. It's our neshama. It's the other half of our neshama, and that's how we need to feel about it. It's not easy, but it's an aspiration. It's an avenue. So how do we go about doing this? So there are a couple of different ways. The first one on page 6, and these are not chidushim, these are just simple observations. The first one is the medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu leaves the confines of the palace, the friendly, comfortable life that he's living, and he sees the suffering, he sees the affliction, the difficulty that other Jews are having. So what is his immediate reaction? Unbelievable medrash. So he says to them, oh, this is horrible. V'haya no sein, I put a little underline. V'haya no sein k'seifav u'mesayeya l'kol echad v'echad mehen. Moshe Rabbeinu would see a guy schlepping. You know, he'd see someone carrying a heavy burden. What did he do? He didn't just say, oh, you know, I really feel bad for you. He literally went over and helped the person. So this is the most, I would say, ambitious way of looking at any circumstance when somebody's suffering, is literally to help them. And sometimes we're in a position to help. Sometimes it's, very immediate. Some of us who are, let's say, trained as, I don't know, infantrymen, we can volunteer for the service. I happen not to be a trained soldier, so that's not going to be on the first. So you have people who have medical expertise, and they're near the scene of an attack, so they can immediately lend their medical expertise. They literally can bring their shoulders. There are people who can help financially. There are people who can help writing letters or with Facebook campaigns. Maybe it has to do with the BDS movement that's in Makas Medina. Whatever it is, the highest level is literally put your shoulder down and figure out how we can help someone. But in a circumstance like this, that's not so easy to do. I sent an email this yesterday, late last night, to all the Kol alumni who are living in the Israelis, living in Israel, in different parts of the country. So one of our alumni, some of you know, Ephraim Rimmel, so he writes me back, among others. One of the things he writes, he says, you know, the truth is that aside from your tefillos, practically, there's very little that you can do for us right now. He says, care packages, that's not the time right now. So we need to think about davening, of course. That's the most immediate and the most effective thing that we can do to help. But even if we're not going to help practically, there are still other ways. So if you look on page 7, in the same context, while Moshe Rabbeinu going out, Vayar b'sivlosam, Rashi has an amazing observation. On that pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu, what does it mean? He saw their burden. Says Rashi, Nosan einav velibo lios meitzer aleihem. He put his eyes and his heart to be meitzer, to be afflicted, to feel it, to care. It was on, Dr. Pelkovitz would say, it was on his mattering map. Like, do we really care? And how much do we care? A good indicator of that is how often are we checking in on what goes on there? If God forbid, lo aleinu, one of us had a close relative who was, you know, in a hospital or in some kind of crisis,
So we'd probably be checking texts from our family members on a regular basis. What's happening to this person? So how often do we feel that we are nasan enov, that we're putting our eyes, when we go to check the news, to check what's happening there? To check what's going on? Because unfortunately now, literally all the time, Rahman al-Islan, hopefully by the time we check the news tonight, everything will be over, there won't be any more news. But unfortunately, it's not just day by day this week. It's literally hour by hour. So someone might say, look, you're just obsessing over nothing. But I think you see from this Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu was modeling something for us. If you can't be there, and you can't do something practically, it's your soul. So you know what? At least pay attention. At least put your mind to it. We should check. We should be following. And different people have different ways to follow this. Some have WhatsApp groups with their family members. Some have friends who are there. Some check on social media. Some check on regular news outlets. It depends where you check something. Israeli news. They're different. Right. On the local American things, you're not going to find too much. You'll find an interview today that shouldn't speak about the interview that was given tonight by a member of this fine administration, that really the root cause of all of this is the settlement building that's been going over the last couple of years. Ribbono shel Olam. So this is one element that we can all do. Just pay attention. And then there's another level, which is on the next page. It's a higher level, but I think the more we pay attention to it, the more we read about it, not in a crippling and a dysfunctional and almost obsessive way that hurts us, but in a way that pays attention. You know, people are being murdered. Do we get to know who they are? What their name is? Where they lived? What their life was like? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Rosh Yeshiva, has an amazing observation about a very intense medrash. The medrash says that Paro, he had this idea about the final solution. So he's going to ask some advice about this idea, about eradicating the Jewish people. So the medrash describes that he spoke to Yisro and Bilam. Bilam said it's a great idea. And Eov was silent. And what happened because of Eov's silence was the story of Job, that he was afflicted. Now, the story itself of Job, according to the literal meaning of the text, has to do with tzaddik v'ralo, has to do with the suffering that we don't understand. But the Medrash is putting a different spin on it, trying to teach us a lesson. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz wants to understand why it is that Eov was afflicted with suffering for sitting in silence, right? Imagine Paro is sitting around the table, a board meeting, and he says to his advisors, okay, we have this problem, they're called the Jews, we have to get rid of them. Here's going to be my solution. We're going to kill them all out, and we're going to throw them in the river, we'll enslave them until they die, and then we'll have no more problems. So Bilam says, great idea. Yisro says, bad idea, he has to run away, and Eov sits there quietly. So Eov, he's going to be afflicted for what reason? He didn't participate. So Reb Shmulevitz has an amazingly powerful idea. He says, Al Karchach, therefore, in the underline, She'in Koevlo, the fact that he was quiet, it shows that he didn't care. I asked Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Paro was the ruler. The fact that Eov, let's say Eov says, I don't agree, or this hurts too much, it's morally objectionable, it wouldn't change his mind. You're talking about a dictator. This is antiquity. It's not like a debate. But says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you know what? Even if you're not going to change the situation, if you cry, if it bothers you and you express that in some way, that shows that you really care. The fact that he just sat there like a block of wood shows that he really didn't care. And therefore, he says, if you don't have that sensitivity to care about the fate of these people, you're going to learn what it means to feel suffering so that you can cultivate a sense of empathy. That's the powerful lesson that he says, the Medrash is trying to teach you with the story of Eov. Obviously, it's not the pshat, but it's a message that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is saying, you know, express it in some way. So again, come back to the same simple observation. If God forbid one of us had a close relative who we knew was in a critical situation, when we say Tehillim for that close relative, we say it and we feel it. You know, we really say it. As sometimes we say Tehillim,
I'm not speaking about anybody else, but I reflect on myself. Sometimes you say tefillin, they call off on the bima, somebody has kapitul tefillin, so you're taking off your tefillin, you're running out of mincha, they call you on the phone, so you say tefillin. Yeah, but it's like, so that's not serious. That's not an expression of really feeling it. And I'm not saying that we can do this every time. There's also an element of, although we're just, this is an acute situation, there is an element of fatigue, psychological fatigue, that if this goes on, if a person is constantly crying about cholim every day of their life and they're saying tefillin, so there's an element of, you know, caution there, not to be overly excessive. But we're in a situation now where every hour people are mamash, their mamash being stabbed. Rabbi Berman, one of our Chavei Kolot, told us today, his sister lives in Yerushalayim, and he said, people are afraid to go outside. So they're afraid to go outside. She said, go outside with a backpack or this or that. Oyemenorah. I haven't actually spoken to my grandmother since a lot of this has started, but Baruch Hashem, my grandmother's in an indoors safe location, hopefully. But people who go out regularly, you know, we have to be sensitive to that. And then the last observation, which is the highest for some, and this is a high level of piety, but there are people who can do this. The Gemara in Tanis, when a person is really, really sensitive, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, Yitzayir Adam Imatzibur, a person should make themselves feel that sensitivity. Shekem otzinu b'Moshe Rabbeinu, shetzir atzmo imatzibur, shenemar videi Moshe kvedim, vayikhu even vayasimu tachtav. So, Moshe Rabbeinu was watching. He's at the top of the mountain, and he's watching the battle with Amalek taking place down in the valley. And they have to hold up his arms, Aaron and Hur, and he's getting tired, so they find him a chair. So you think Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabban Shel Yisrael, he's 80 plus years old, they should find him a decent chair. What do they get him? They get him a stone. So the Gemara wants to know, why they get him a stone? Because the stone is not comfortable. And if those people down there are going sleepless nights, hand-to-hand combat with an Amalekite gang, I'm not going to sit on a big comfy chair. This is a very high level. Does this mean that a person shouldn't watch the Cubs game? That's a separate question. Depends how nervous you are. Does it mean that a person shouldn't go on vacation? The person shouldn't have dinner? Shouldn't go out to the pizza shop? Everybody has to apply this to their own life in their own way. But I know someone, Sigismund, who when Gilad Shalit was captured, this person, they used to sleep with two pillows. And when Gilad Shalit was captured, they started only sleeping with one pillow. For 5 years, they slept with only one pillow until Gilad Shalit came home. And then they started sleeping again with two pillows. Now, is that going to change somebody's life? It's not going to change somebody's life. What's the point of this Gemara? Is that small behavioral change makes that person conscious of what's going on. So it doesn't mean we need to take radical steps to change our life. But it's an interesting thing to think about. What does it mean? The Gemara has a principle that when there is a famine, shnas batzores, marital life doesn't go on as usual. Because people are dying in the streets from hunger. So you're going to say shalom alai nafshi and close your door and live like everything is just fine? So this goes back to what we started with, which is it's a difficult balance. Because we are living regular lives in a place that Baruch Hashem is not affected by this in an immediate way. So finding the right balance of these avenues is significant. It's important and it's challenging. But I think it behooves us to ask the question, you know, is it the Vayarbis of Losam that we can help? Is it the Vayarbis of Losam that we just pay attention? Is it that we need to really express our emotion that we care about it? Is it something that we can do in our own lives that can just make us feel connected in a tangible way? And for everybody, that's going to be, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but it's a concept that we can think about if this really matters to us, and it absolutely must. So I wanted to conclude with two avenues, two ways of thinking about takeaways of messages that can give us a little direction to grow in for ourselves, to think about for chizuk in this kind of context. So I'm going to take these two messages from two of the Kedoshim, two of the martyrs who left the world in these last 2 weeks. So the first message, which we'll call the message of Ava,
comes from a Rav. He was the father of 7 children. He lived in the Ir Atika. His name is Rav Nechemia Lavi. Nechemia Lavi was a Rav in Yeshivat Ateret Yerushalayim. He was living in the Old City. And on Motzoi Shabbos, there was a terrorist who was wielding a knife and attacking a couple in the Old City. And this Rav Nechemia Lavi, his kids hear, they're screaming, they tell him there's a terrorist attack, he had a gun on him, he runs down the stairs from the apartment, and many of us have been to the Old City, we know kind of the sense of what this is like, you know, it's tall stone buildings, kind of narrow alleyways, he comes down from the stairwell, he sees a woman running, so he starts running, but he's actually knifed by the terrorist before he can find his way and actually subdue the terrorist. His wife comes down and she sees Nebuch, he's dying, the terrorist steals his weapon and starts firing around until it's taken care of. So this Malach Hashem Tzevaot, this tzaddik, now leaves behind 7 orphans and his wife. And there was a beautiful hesped that was offered for him by Rav Shlomo Aviner, in addition to the president of Israel who was masped him. And Rav Shlomo Aviner offered a hesped, and this hesped is one element that we can take for us. This is something that this person lived, that we can take away for ourselves. But it's not just something that was a hesped that was given by Rav Shlomo Aviner, which we'll get to in a second. I was able to procure, because if you search long enough online, you find a lot of things, amazing things. There was a letter that he wrote to his unit from the Miluim. After his 7th child was born, I think it was 12 years in this particular unit in the Miluim, where he decided that it's time to hang it up, and he's leaving them. So you have on page 10, this is a Xerox copy of the letter that Rav Nechemia, Hashem Yikom Domo, wrote, Achai v'rei'ai lochamei u'mefakdei ha'pluga. After 12 years of full service of Miluim from Chomat Magen. Chomat Magen was, anybody remember when it was Chomat Magen? That was 2003, around Pesach time, 2003, where there was a barrage of incessant terror attacks. It was a terror attack, a horrible one, in Leila Seder, 2003. So after that was the operation, military operation, the IDF military operation, Chomat Magen. So that's what he's referring to. That was the beginning of his service with this unit. After a lot of thinking about it, I decided I'm going to conclude. Now, several years ago, since our 6th child, we have 6 children, so now I'm just volunteering. He's not obligated to go anymore, but he had been volunteering for a while, but at a certain point he can't do it, etc. Let's go to the paragraph where he writes, Kama milim mehalev. You can read this all by yourself later. Tzahal bechlal, ume'erech hamiluim befrat, hu be'enai, Si shoavas Yisrael b'dor shalanu. Tzahal and the service in the Miluim, the reserves, that is, in my eyes, the pinnacle of the love of Israel in our generation. V'si shoavas hamedina, the height of the love for the state. All of the individualism. Alisa al-Madim, you put on your uniform. Hisharta batzadas kol ha-pratiyos v'anochis. All of your individualism, everything that's egotistical, you leave it on the side. Because we're all here for the team, for the group, for the state, for the unit. Hishtachrarta mikol chiluki ha-deos ha-kalem v'akoshim bin chelke amenu ha-ov mikol u-mikol muhuma ha-politis v'his alisa ishis l'gavoa acher. You have elevated yourself, ennobled yourself into somebody greater. And he says, Tachlis, at 2 paragraphs later, Tachlis, I didn't know that's how you spell Tachlis, it's good. Tachlis, slang, Libi itchem ube'emes esmach l'shmor al kesher. I want to stay in touch. And then he writes in the postscript, you know, I realized over 12 years I never took a single picture. So if somebody could please send me a picture of our unit that you took over the years, my family would really appreciate it. What's at the heart of this message? It's the message of Ava. Ava is latet. The musag of Ava is, it's the shorish ches is latet b'li gavul. It's not to be limited in yourself, it's to be open to others.
And this is the life that he led. And this is what, if you look on the next page, I gave you the whole hesped. It's from Ataret Kohanim, Ataret Jewish Alliance website. They have a link to Rav Aviner's, Rav Aviner's the Rosh Hashiva. Third paragraph, fourth paragraph from the end. Rav Nechemia was in love with Torah. Day and night, he learned, taught, delved into, and fulfilled the Torah. It is possible to put a sefer next to him and say, as it is written in the Gemara in Baba Kama, this one fulfilled what is written in this one, in his actions and in his exceptional character traits. He was in love with Eretz Yisrael. He was overjoyed to live in the heart of Yerushalayim in a difficult area. He was in love with Am Yisrael. So none of us, hopefully, will ever be faced with the challenge of being Moser Nefesh like he did. So none of us can ever say, you could say, oh, you know, he's such a gibor, such a giant. But every one of us has the quality of Ava, has the midah of Ava within us. So perhaps part of the challenge, the takeaway, to continue his life, you see his picture, this is him wearing his uniform on the top of page 11, that's Rav Nechemia wearing his Madei Miluim. We can all cultivate the sense of Ava in different ways. We can cultivate Avas Yisrael, Avas Eretz Yisrael, Avas Torah. We could be people of Ava. People of love. That's one thing we can do. Because we need to do something, and that's one. And the other aspect, perhaps, in addition to Ava, is another Aleph that we can search for and cultivate, is the concept of Emunah. And this is important for some, especially on a theological level, during a period of crisis like this, because the question becomes, you know, we always, when we face crises, we need to strengthen our emunah, both individually and collectively, nationally. But there is a further complication for some, for in our community, part of the foundation of our religious worldview is that we are in the process of geula. The state of Israel is part of the endgame of the Bias Gold Tzedek. This is the Reisha Smichas Gula Seinu. So how could it be that we're in the footsteps of the Mashiach, and yet we're having people who are being slaughtered in the streets of Yerushalayim? How does that... It's more complex than just Tzadik Viralo. So there was there was a talk that was given, a Kol Kore, which we can preface with a remarkable historical note. This Kol Kore was given by, at that time, the first chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. The Kol Kore was given after the 1929 massacres, in which many of the students of the Chevron Yeshiva were massacred in Chevron, and then they had to leave. They were forced to abandon the yeshiva in Chevron. The whole yeshiva had to move. And there were other cities in Israel, where the Jewish population had to completely vacate because of the violence that was happening. And then it became a period of very high tension at the Kotel. So Rav Kook offered a Kol Kore. Rav Kook's message is going to be, it's reinforced by a historical note, a fascinating, fascinating historical note, which is brought to us in an essay, a published essay online, by Rav Eitan Henkin. Rav Eitan Henkin, Zichron Levracha, who I was not familiar with until last week, but when I found online the writings, the Ksavim, published articles, unbelievable, incredible scholarship that was lost to our world. Himself and his wife, who is a talented graphic artist, now for orphans, for children. So, if you go online, if you do a search, I think the ones I saw were all in Hebrew. But he has unbelievable articles, great Chidushei Torah, historical insights, fascinating, fascinating personality. A lot of very interesting things there. And one of them is this piece that you're looking on page 13, which I'm going to summarize for you. Rav Henkin, Hashem Yikom Domo, quotes from a parsha alon that was going on, that was going around a couple of years ago, recognizing the 75th Yahrzeit of Rav Kook. Rav Kook died in Gimel Elul 1935, so his 70th Yahrzeit was 2010. So 2010, a lot of people were publishing things from Rav Kook. So in a journal called Ma'at Min Ha'or, which last night I was looking into using a piece from Ma'at Min Ha'or because it was led by Rav Hanan Porat, Zichron Levracha, who was a very important figure in the development of life in Israel the last couple of years, but I decided not to in the end. So it's interesting. They quote from Ma'at Min Ha'or that there was someone, Rav Yochanan Fried, who found in the Gnozim, in the archives of Beit HaRav. Beit HaRav is the house of Rav Kook. Now, if you go today, you go down Rehov Yafo. Let's say you're going down from the entrance to the city to the old city. So right, almost opposite Kikar Tzion, which is to the right, if you look to the left, there's a little street that goes up toward Hanavim. It's called Rehov HaRav Kook. On the left side of that street, there is a building where Rav Kook's house and yeshiva still stand, which is now a museum. It's awesome. If you ever have a chance to go there, highly recommended. So in Beit HaRav, they have Sfarim from Rav Kook and letters. They have a beautiful video that they did. They have the original Beis Medrash in exact condition that it was when Rav Kook founded the yeshiva there. That was the home of Merkas HaRav, which now is in Kiryat Moshe. But that was the original placement of the yeshiva when it was founded. I think it was 1924, around 1924. I forget, it was 21, 24, something like that, early 1920s. So in there, somebody was going through the archives and they found a letter, an invitation from Rav Kook to a group of people to come to his home to discuss an important matter, to formulate a response. The names of the people in this invitation list included last names such as Usishkin, Ben Gurion, Katz Nelson, Yitzchak Ben Tzvi, also famous for being on the face of a bill in Israel, the head of the Mizrahi, Rav Meir Berlin, Bar Ilan, and Rav Maimon, all invited to Rav Kook's house for a very important meeting. And the only thing it has on there is that it was Thursday, the 24th of Iyar. That's all it says. It doesn't tell you what year it is, and it doesn't tell you what important event they're discussing. They just say, everybody should come to Rav Kook's house for this meeting. So it describes how scholars are trying to figure out what they were meeting about. This is obviously very significant. Rav Kook dies in 1935. What were they meeting about? So the initial suggestion that had been published was they were likely meeting about what was known as the parsha of the murder of Arlozorov. Arlozorov was a major political figure in Israel who was murdered on the beach in Tel Aviv, walking on the promenade, and nobody knew who murdered him, so people thought it was the right-wing activists who murdered him. It's a long story. How Rav Kook knew that wasn't true. They arrested someone claiming that he had murdered him. Turns out he didn't. Long story. So they assumed that was part of the Ratzach Arlozorov. But the Arlozorov murder took place in 1932, so they figured this must have taken place in 1933. Comes Rav Eitan Hankin and does a little bit of research. And he says, it can't be that it took place in 1932. Because the only time that the 24th of Iyar fell on a Thursday was in 1930. So it could not have been in response to the Arlozorov murder. What was it in response to, he says? What was going on in 1930 that everybody was tumbling about? Hebron. The response to the Hebron massacres and the anti-Jewish persecution. So this is the scene of the meeting in Rav Kook's house of these figures of whom we have heard a great deal. And then Rav Kook publishes an open letter, a kol kore, to the whole Jewish community, how he responds to the destruction of the Hebron community and the massacres in different cities. And that's what you find on page 14. It's called Shuvu Lebitzaron. I came across this thanks to Rabbi Berman, who found it in an article from Rav Yaakov Filber from Machon Meir. Machon Meir, some of you are familiar with, it's an amazing place. It's a Baal Tshuva yeshiva in Kiryat Moshe. And it happens to be that I was thinking that the two tracks of response that we're talking about tonight are Ahava and Emuna. Happens to be that for those of you who know this tidbit of trivia, that the title of the Machon Meir Parsha Sheet, which you see in Israel in many shuls when you go there, is called Ba'ahava u'Be'emunah. Just
Just saying. So this, so Rav Filber sends you to this thing, so we're able to track it down in the Ma'amarei HaRiyah, where they quote and collect a lot of Rav Kook's letters and things. So I didn't have Ma'amarei HaRiyah, so I was able to get it on Otzar HaChachma. So the next three pages are this Kol Kore that Rav Kook published for an open response, because this was the issue of the day. People, are Jews are being slaughtered. How do you respond? So Rav Kook describes a message, an emuna message that I think can resonate with us. I put a little one with an arrow. We see, says Rav Kook, I put the little one right above the arrow. Roim b'meshech ha-mahalach shel tchias ha-uma. We see over the course of the process of the life that's coming into our nation. Meaning, the Jewish people are awakening from Golus, from Europe. They're coming to Israel. They're building a national character. What happens? V'archavas ha-yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the expansion of the living in Israel. Harbe chalifos. Many chalifos. Shifts. Movements. Alios. V'yuridos. V'alios. There are ups. And then there are downs. And then there are ups. Kol yurida. B'mahalach ha-mifal. Every downer. Every step backwards, or I shouldn't say backwards, every step down, over the course of this process, harehi bechinas, it is an aspect of hiskasus shel hagoel. It's the hiddenness of the redemption. V'chol aliyah haba acharea, harehi bechinas hisgaluso. And when we see things are going well, that's when the redemption is revealed. It says Rav Kook in the next paragraph, we've seen this time and time again, where the process of redemption is revealed to us, we can see it, we get it, and then when it's hit, then it's hidden from us. Next top of the top of the next page on 15. Umizan from this, alinu lomod, we need to learn v'lakachas lekach tov, and to take a good lesson. Shelo liot noflim beruchenu, we should not be despondent. Gam mechardasa shel hanefila hanora. And even though there was such an awesome tragedy, Asher Nafal Yishuvenu Ke'es Al Yedei HaRashayim HaRotzchem HaTameim Asher Hargu Bezonu Chassidi El Yom Gedor HaTor Ve'ira B'Yerushalayim Chevron Motza Sfat Uviyesar HaMakomos. He's listing all the places that were affected by the riots. He says, even though it was terrible, it was awesome, awful, heartrending, and they destroyed so much, etc., etc. Nonetheless, we have to strengthen our emunah. We have to know that this is just the concealment of the redemption, not the bittul, not the nullification of the redemption. And with time, bar hadavar, in the next paragraph, shelofi ha'erech shalakiso yaze godol yeha or asher yigale. Ultimately, the light will shine through. So this is an important message anytime we're thinking about emunah. But specifically, says Rav Kook, not to lose hope in the tahalich of the geula. Geula, it's not just like, you know, you push the button and it's going to go on easy streets. It's just look at the process of how it's developed over the course of time. And this, perhaps, I think, gives us a way to look at one way. Obviously, again, we're not dealing with the meta questions of the suffering and the difficulties, the personal tsar that people are feeling and that we should try to sympathize or even perhaps empathize with on some level, but on a hashkafic level, to understand that the Rabbono Shel Olam is guiding the geula, we shouldn't give up on it, we should strengthen ourselves, and we should know that this is a hester, this is a hiddenness of the geulas, but it's not the end. It's not the abrogation of the process. It's just the geulas, the geula being hidden from us. So to summarize this context of ways of thinking, number one, we have cultivating Ahava. That every one of us can do. Avas Yisrael is manifest in so many ways. Avas Eretz Yisrael. Just becoming people of Ahava, just like someone like Rav Nechemia Lavi. And then, in this context of the historical note from Rav Eitam Henkin, of thinking about cultivating emuna in our own lives. And we don't need to be a great hero and a martyr, Al Kiddush Hashem, to cultivate emunah, each one of us, on our own level. So these are two things that we can do in the greater context of the response. And hopefully, Mirtz Hashem, soon we're going to hear our good news, and the Bias Gold Tzedek will come, and this will become theoretical, but we should always keep in mind, as Rav Kook says, that the Geula, the Tahalich of the Geula is still moving, it's unabated, it might be harder to see, it might be clouded now, it might be occluded, but the Geula is still on our way, and we should do whatever we can, in whatever level, to try to be mishtatif, to hasten that, bringing more light into the world. Yashikov.